Anyway, good afternoon, everyone. I want to thank you for being here, especially the letting us come out to Mac campus. So I'm Christopher Manfredi. I'm Dean of the Faculty of Arts, and I'm here as part of the open forum on free expression and peaceful assembly that the principal asked me to lead in response to the first recommendation of the Jutra report relating to the events of November 10th on the downtown campus. I know in a bucolic atmosphere like the Mac campus, these may seem like downtown issues, protests and picketing and various activities like that, but it seems to me that it's important to get the views of the entire university community, which includes obviously Mac campus, and Mac campus may in fact have its own issues around these lines that we're not aware of. Certainly you had picketing activity during the Monaca strike, which I'm sure caused inconveniences and also perhaps some tensions among people at the Mac campus. You have animal care facilities, you have laboratories, you have various areas where occupations or other kinds of actions like that might cause particular difficulties. So I'd like to hear what sort of issues might be unique to Mac campus, as well as just your general views on these two important issues for a university. In Dean Jutra's report, he identified four general sets of questions that he thought were important in these areas. He talked about the location of peaceful assemblies in particular, and this may be of particular relevance to the Mac campus with, as I said, animal care facilities, laboratories, and the like. The question of whether assemblies should be allowed to take place in any location on a university campus, whether there should be special locations set aside, or whether there should be particular locations that are excluded from any kind of activity such as this. He raised a set of issues around the question of duration of protests. We saw this in the downtown campus again when, for 4 or 5 days, the James Administration Building was occupied. Whether the university should tolerate protests in a particular location that go on for more than a set amount of time. He raised questions around identity, and in fact we've had a lot of discussion around this in the various events that we've held. The question of individuals concealing their identity, wearing masks, hoods, whether that in fact automatically renders an assembly unpeaceful if individuals do that. And then just in the area of free expression, he raised certain questions about what are the various limits to free expression. Are there things that go past the line of legitimate expression, legitimate commentary? So I'm here to listen to people's views on all of those things. Specific questions about are there places on the Mac campus, for example, where you think people should never be allowed to go to protest, and if they do go there, that intervention should take place immediately, whether there might be value in designating a particular area on campus for these sorts of things. This is a different kind of campus. It's not surrounded by a city, so it's perhaps less permeable than the downtown campus in those respects. So I'm really here to listen to your points of view. I don't know the people in the room, so particularly if there are non-academics in the room who have views on this, I'd be interested in hearing their particular perspective. These forums have been unique in that they've really brought together sets of people who aren't always in the same room, namely students, faculty, senior administrators. The provost and deputy provost are here to hear your views, non-academic staff as well. So the opportunity is really yours. If you have reflections on what's been going on downtown, issues that have arisen on Mac campus, I'm happy to hear those views. So the floor is open to your points of view. I guess the first question I would ask is this just a downtown campus issue? Where you sit at Mac campus, do you see these issues of free expression, peaceful assembly, coming out of the events of November 10th, as something that's just so foreign to your experience out here that you wonder what all the fuss is about. I'd be interested just throwing that question. Is that something that, are we just obsessing over it down there? Go ahead, please. And identify, tell me who you are. I just let you know you're being live streamed, you're being recorded. People can send in questions over the internet if they are watching, so please let me know.
So I'm a faculty member here, and I would have to say that I knew all the students who were out on boycott outside. I mean, I knew them all, most of them were in my classes. There's a difference because I know most of the students. I can call them by name. And I also spoke to them my personal views on what they were talking about, and we agreed to disagree, and that was fine. So, I mean, it's not so impersonal out here.
So
that's a huge difference.
So the smaller, closer community makes a big difference when these sorts of issues arise?
So. I feel so.
Great. Is that a sense that other people have as well? Is that, I see some heads nodding. Do you want to elaborate on your head nod?
I'm William Hendershot. I'm a professor. I'm associate dean academic as well. And I feel that the atmosphere here is very different. And I think it would be very surprising to see the kind of activities that we saw downtown take place here. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but it would really surprise me. It just doesn't seem to be close to where we are in terms of what's going on.
Okay. So besides the inherent cohesiveness of the smaller campus, perhaps, do you think you're doing things out at Mac campus that are perhaps mitigating some of these things, or is it just the nature of the place? Are the things that you're doing that we might learn about for the downtown campus that I can communicate, or is it just it's just in the DNA of the Mac campus? Yeah. Go
ahead. It's Carolyn Bagan. I mean, we're quite free to speak to our students. I mean, the thing is that they had a joined the strike here in the foyer, and there was no sort of protest movement surrounding it. People could go up and talk to them. I think different faculty members did go up and talk to them. And no one, it was a discussion. It was a discussion. And I think it's because we do know more of our students personally. So there's less of the student being a number and much more of the student being a person. And so we can disagree on a philosophical level without feeling that it has to go into a sort of like a protest movement. I mean, that's also because we're a smaller faculty.
Yeah, well, so it's inherent in the nature of the place, but there's nothing that you could identify that's perhaps helping to add that up. You talk to them, okay, provide them. Other things about Mac campus that may make it unique, or perhaps there are some unique challenges. You mentioned that you think that it's not impossible that it would happen here. Let's imagine that if it did happen here, what are some of the issues that you might have to think about, some of the particular challenges or risks or dangers that you might have?
Jim Files, the Department of Natural Resource Sciences. I'm a professor and chair. I just wanted to add on this that, yes, I think there's perhaps good communication between students and staff and professors, or perhaps better communication, and so that we may be less likely to see this sort of protest activity here that was on the downtown campus, or that the nature of that activity might be different. That being said, as the boycott day approached and over the last few weeks, there was a lot of concern about what might have happened amongst teaching staff, lab demonstrators, and those kinds of things. I got personally many questions from professors. Okay, what are we going to do if? And in fact, in one case, this was a teaching lab technician was told by a student or a group of students that he should expect to have his lab blockaded, and that there would be a protest, and that there, he should expect that to happen. And so he came to me and said, okay, what do I do and how do I prepare for this? And so we discussed and we thought it out as to, at what level, obviously you would try to diffuse the situation as it arose, and if things escalated, then he would have to involve security or whatever. And we found the materials that came from the provost office that described, reminded us of the policies in place and those kinds of things. We found those very useful in as guidance documents for what might happen. But I think to say that, yeah, perhaps we have a good relationship with our students, on one hand, I would not say that protests or demonstrations could not happen here, and in fact there's some indication that they could happen here, and they might happen in ways that are not so different from what happened downtown, although the other difference is that the potential body of individuals that were participating in those is smaller, so that I'm not a crowd psychologist person. I'm undoubtedly there are people around that know these things, but presumably once you get past a crowd of a certain size, then that crowd takes on its own behavior, and we may not have that kind of potential to get a critical mass here. So that may just be a feature of our size.
So one of the things I've been trying to get at is people's sense of when does an assembly go from being peaceful to not peaceful. Now, you mentioned blockading a laboratory. Now, I assume that a group of protesters trying to communicate their point of view by blockading a laboratory or classroom, that has gone beyond, that's gone outside of the realm of peaceful. So does that make sense? I mean, is that the sense that I'm getting from you? What were some of the other ifs that people brought up? So you said if they blockade our classroom, if they blockade a laboratory, are there other ifs on the MAC campus that you think, are there places where you think the campus is vulnerable or areas that we need to, that you need to think about, sir?
I think in my view the main area will be the greenhouses, and they are especially for example some professors, even myself, we are doing some sort of research which falls in the genetic engineering area, so means the GMOs which should not be grown outside the greenhouse space. For example, if those students or other who are protesting, they are attacking that side of thing, it will also ruin the research. At the same time, it can also affect the environment. I am more concerned about, for example, it should be, pretty much watched, so means that it should not be anything happen to those places.
So if there were an attempt to enter those greenhouses, yes, that would be something that you...
This is just my view.
So if you were to say if there's an area where peaceful assembly is prohibited, it would be in the greenhouses. You mentioned GMOs. So there's stuff that goes on MAC campus, I assume. I confess that I don't know everything that goes on here, but genetically modified organisms, you do work with animals, assume animals are used in experimentation, you raise animals. These are areas where there's lots of controversy. There are people out there who think that there shouldn't be GMOs, there shouldn't be animal testing or animals being used in research. Are these the sorts of things that give rise to any concerns for you? These are the kinds of things that people might protest, and whether they're students or people from outside the university, are these certain things that give rise to you?
That's just another reason I mentioned that, because, that's the area where they can get additional support to do that. So that's the reason I mentioned about the GMOs and stuff like that.
There are things, yes, sir.
Prasher, Bioresource Engineering. I think that I would concur with what has been said before as to the possibility of any trouble. I don't think that would happen on this campus. Or it can happen if John Abbott students come in, and then suddenly that can actually change the balance. But otherwise, I think... when we got the memo from the provost, we were not sure, because you asked the question, are we prepared if something happens? I'm not 100% sure if we are. I think we are perhaps being complacent. We think that this is not going to happen here, so we are not as prepared as perhaps we should be.
Okay. other reflections on that? Why? What are some of the things that you think you need to do to prepare? If there, and one thing is to try to identify, of course, when does something cease to be peaceful, and then what do you do about it? And then, so what are some of the issues that we should be thinking about? Well, you might not. So tell me what those polarizing issues that you don't have that we do have. So one of the questions, of course, is about free expression.
Yep.
And the extent to which people are able to express their dissent, both from the university administration and their points of view on other aspects. So I'd be interested in hearing about that. So.
Well, I mean, in terms of polarizing issues, I think right now that the senior administration is a polarizing issue, and some of the events that have occurred. And it's probably going to be targeted, or any dissent is going to be targeted downtown where they are located.
Right. Right.
That's my perspective on that. And as we've seen that's happened, the James Building has been the
sure.
center of that. And so that is a focus of polarization. Right. And so I think some of the questions that have to be asked is, what has changed in the last 2 or 3 or 4 years that has changed the mindset of the population? I think there has to be some serious introspection, you know, from the top down.
Okay, well, what do you think some of the things that have changed are? This is, people are here to listen and learn.
I think there's been a lot of pressures put on the university in terms of financial, and there's been, in terms from that perspective, there's been some pulling back, and that's understandable. And I think not only from the staff, but also from students, right? And usually, if you're on the front lines, being the senior administration, you're the target, right? And in terms of, are we going to see the same types of movements out here that you're seeing downtown? From a strategic perspective, if I was in a student's position, no, because the amount of media and the amount of attention that you're going to be gathering, assembling out here, is going to be small compared to the amount of media and movement and population and mass that you get downtown.
Okay. One of the questions I asked when I met with, one of the other things I've been doing besides the open forum is making myself available to meet with groups and faculty council. So I was meeting with a faculty council recently, and this issue of polarization and dissent came up, and I said, do you actually feel comfortable criticizing the senior administration? Or
yes.
Or do you feel there's a chilling effect? Good, okay. That's
this
good to hear.
An academic institution,
right.
Where you should be free to
voice your opinion either in support or in dissent. Correct?
I agree, but you know that you should be able to. So the question is, can people do it? Do they feel comfortable? Do they feel constrained? Do they worry that if they do express criticism, there'll be consequences for that? Or is that something that we need to worry about? Does everyone have such that sanguine view? Criticism is permitted, it's encouraged, there's no problem with it. Is this view held out at MAC? Or reasonably well?
I guess not.
Well, maybe it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes, people aren't willing to say that they're not free to criticize. That's an important thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't be quite so sanguine. Fortunately, I was on sabbatical leave in the fall during the Monaco strike, but the little glimpses I got when I'd come onto campus was of a different atmosphere than I had experienced in 26 years at McGill, that there was certainly a tone, I think, that people as a professor, I'm Tim Johns in the School of Dietetics and Nutrition, Human Nutrition, the tone was different, and as a professor, you sort of felt caught in the middle between your colleagues who you were very close to and the university's position and the messages that we got by email, et cetera, that set a tone that certainly made me feel that better not speak out on an issue like this. And I think that anything like that sort of
just sort of dampens our enthusiasm for expressing ourselves on a number of issues. And I certainly welcome the initiative that you've taken to try to sort of rebalance, I think, some of the, you know, this collegiality that we've certainly expected out of McGill.
So you found that the messages, particularly during the Menakis strike, there are two views on this. Some people want the university to communicate as often as possible to as many people as possible. There are others who sort of started to get tired of some of these messages, and it still happens. Is there a balance there, do you think? So your sense was that the balance, or was it the tone of the messages, the number of messages, the balance?
For me, it was the tone, but I don't know what would have been the right thing during that situation. I mean, for every action, there's a reaction, and you know, this was certainly a situation where there were things that needed to be dealt with by both, and both parties were in a confrontational situation. So either way, there was going to be negative repercussions from that. I don't know what could have been done better, but I think certainly that's certainly part of the reflection that we need to have at McGill. That situation, we talk about McDonald, you know, we wouldn't expect to see strikers in front of the campus or pickets. That was something totally new in my experience, and I think for most of us that have been in here. So any protest coming from students, if that was possible, then these things are possible as well. But I don't know what could have been done differently or better, but I think this is part of the reflection.
Well, but think about it. Sure. Someone behind you sort of nodded when I asked whether it was the tone or not. So let me hear what you had to say. So.
My name is Lise Menard. I'm from ICS, Service Desk, Support Staff. Of course, I was one of the Monaco picketers. And I felt we, of course, read all the communication that was sent to the staff member. And I feel that it was very, very, very hurtful to us. As a person like me, who's been working at McGill for 27 years, excuse me, and been devoted worker, and to be portrayed like a, don't know what the word is, but like a real, I can't think of the word, but a real bad person, it was extremely hurtful. On another note, you were asking what you could do, perhaps what you could do better. One of the things that I have to say is that the security people at McDonald campus were extraordinary. They were so good. And I don't believe that you have the same thing downtown. And that was very, very helpful because they were so good to us, so polite, so respectful of us, unlike the emails that you all receive. They were very, very respectful of us. And, you know, we wouldn't step one inch on the grass to do anything that would upset them because they gave us the respect that we deserved. But I don't believe there was the same case downtown. Now, I realize that downtown you're dealing with a much bigger crowd and probably different things. But I think you have to, I mean, I know we were in a confrontation situation, but to just put everybody in the same boat was very hurtful. I personally voted no for the strike, and yet I was portrayed like as a bad person. And that's, you know, I think you have to, there's something to be learned on this.
You mentioned security. One of the sort of buzzwords on campus, downtown at least, is the notion of securitization of the campus. There's too many security. There's cameras around. There are now provisional protocols for protests. There's a protocol for entering the James Building. Some of you may have experienced it now. And a lot of people have complained about the securitization of campus. And I don't know if that sounds like you have a good relationship with your security people here. Is this an issue that is something that resonates with you here? Is that not a problem? I mean, and of course, there's been some recent security incidents, not on the Mac campus, well, actually on Mac campus, but also at John Abbott with, I think a young woman at John Abbott was attacked. I think there have been some incidents here with gay and lesbian students. So there are some security issues here, but that have had to be dealt with. But is securitization of the campus that a lot of people talk about downtown, whether it's accurate or not, but that's certainly a perception. Is this something that's a big deal at Mac campus, or something that you need to think about at Mac campus? You know, I saw you had a comment on it.
It's Caroline Baig. I mean, my concern is not it's because I quite often work late at night, and it's walking home, and there was a second attack last week, someone ran 2 weeks ago. And I felt that security, we got the email message here 7 hours after John Abbott received it. And it was Friday night at 9 o'clock, and they received it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It happened Thursday night. And to me, it was disturbing because I often work at late at night, and I know a lot of women graduate students who work late, and they were walking home. Okay. So to me, it was, securitization of the campus, I'm not sure about that, but security on the campus, because I'm beginning to feel
almost
that
the opposite problem.
The opposite problem, because I'm beginning to feel that some people are regarding this as a bit of an easy prey area. I mean, we have John Abbott. There's intramural sports going on all the time. There's the classes and that. There's a lot, and the people pass through this campus going from the lakeshore, etc. There's a lot of access, and it's more about my personal security, not from the students or from anyone else. It's other people.
Outside. Did you have a comment, sir? I thought I saw your hand. Any other comments on that? So here the question is actually not so much about over-securitization, but perhaps lack of security or feeling of insecurity because of the particular circumstances.
Yeah, but it's not.
It's not internal. It's not mostly
internal.
Okay.
Okay,
so it doesn't come from people exercising their rights of free expression or peacefully protesting things. It's about the standard things that people worry about when they're in a suburban environment, at least in this case. Anything else about on those topics about feeling a disconnect from the administration or an inability to criticize the administration? Anyone else have anything to say about that? Yeah. I think it might, yeah.
I might just add to that, and again, in my position as of chair, lots of people came to me during the strike and said, we'd like to go and talk to the strikers. Can we do that? Are we allowed to? And some of them were sufficiently worried. I mean, the way they would express it is to say, if somebody finds out that we're down talking to the strikers, will it influence, you know, whether I get to go on sabbatical next year or whatever? And, I mean, my response to that is that, absolutely. I mean, this should have no impact on how you're treated at all. But nevertheless, there was a feeling out there, not just one or two people, but a feeling of somewhat insecurity as to whether there would be implications for certain behaviors. So there is an uncertainty there.
Right. So that suggests to me that there's something that had a chilling effect on people's understanding of their right to express themselves freely by talking to coworkers on strike. Do you have any sense of why they would think that? Is there something that the university was doing or failing to do, perhaps, that might have led to that sort of perception?
Ian Strachan, Associate Dean, Grad Studies. I think one of the reasons that came about is interpretation of some of the communiques, because I know I was speaking to one of my colleagues in another department about that same topic, and she was under the impression that the directive was you must not, because it's not within your area of your standard duties. And that's a complete misrepresentation of, I believe, what was coming down from the communication. The communication was, you are supposed to continue on your duties as they are, but there was nothing there that said you couldn't speak with your colleagues, the people who were on the work stoppage situation. And so it came down to almost individual chairs interpreting what was being communicated and then disseminating that information out. And this is one of the continuing problems in my mind anyways at McGill, is that we have a miscommunication problem. I mean, we have good intentions, but it's not getting out to who it should in the right manner.
So some of the rules could have been more clearly communicated. I mean, because I think one of the concerns, of course, is in a labor dispute, you can't be seen to be trying to influence the people who are on the picket line. And so some people overinterpret that to mean I shouldn't really be talking to these people, whereas, of course, you can have an ordinary conversation with someone you've worked with side by side for years. But perhaps being clear about what the boundaries were might
that's,
have been.
And that's right. And I think there were a lot of us who, you know, went down on our lunchtime and just had a conversation with people, like you said, who we've been working with for 10 years. And, you know, we identified ourselves clearly as, you know, who we were, so that, you know, whoever was in charge, the strike captain or whatever, wasn't seeing us as something else other than someone who was visiting a colleague and having a conversation. Very neutral, very, you know, something you would do any day, every day anyways.
Okay. Sir.
Shiv Prashar, Bioresource Engineering. I think just to follow up on Ian, we also had a situation where we weren't very sure, like, for example, should we invite them to the departmental Christmas party? And we also give, whenever there's a birthday, we always give them birthday cards. Now they're on strike. Should the department send them birthday cards? They were not very clear, you know. We were not sure if we should be doing that or not.
Okay.
So that kind of, you know, I think it's perhaps not fully understanding. A lot of things were coming in the pipeline, you know, but we were not sure whether we should do that or not.
Okay, so clarity is very important. Chandra.
I think, Chris, Chandra Madramudu, I think a lot of the points that come up sort of reinforce your opening statement when you say that you said that MAC is a different environment, a smaller environment. And so one recognizes you can't tailor make messages for every single faculty or every single community. But I think what was very much at the heart of what's very much at the heart of what a lot of people are raising is that because it is a smaller environment, because it's a more intimate environment, do some of these events create polarization in an environment that is not normally, doesn't normally function that way. And so I guess in terms of communications, are there things that could be done that continue to foster that collegiality and closeness that people have with their colleagues and students on the campus? That's a very different situation from the main campus.
Any follow-up comments to that? I want to think about, I mean, I want to get your, quite, so taking yourselves out of the MAC campus context, just observing what's happened mostly downtown, the events of November 10th and the events of February. I mean, Dean Jutras' report that generated this forum comes out of the specific events of November 10th. There was another occupation in February. So the questions I want to get to, so some of the issues that have arisen in previous things, for example, can an occupation ever be peaceful? Some of the individuals who occupied in November 10th and also actually in February they called it a party. They didn't use the word occupation. But they yelled, you know, this is a peaceful occupation. So to be frank, my own view is that an occupation is by its nature an aggressive act. That's where I come from. I may be wrong. But so I just want to get your general views as citizens, as members of the university community, what you think of that particular issue. Because it will help to frame up perhaps the university's response, whether it's downtown or perhaps unlikely as it might seem here at MAC, the university's response to these things. I'd like to be able to report as many views as I can on this. So I'd appreciate getting your sense of that, just as citizens, as members of the university community, as opposed to people who might experience it at the MAC campus. If you have views on that. Sir.
George McCordon, Gill School of Environment. I guess the question to me is why do they feel the need to occupy the building? It seems to be sort of a last resort. And so the lines of communication, their message they feel is not being listened to or not being heard, and so they resort to taking a more aggressive approach. And I think there was a difference between the November and the February occupation in that the November occupation, there were people who walked into that building with masks on, and to my understanding, the February one, people were it was more visible, it was more obvious who they were. So I think the question to me is not so much, it's the occupation thing is a really difficult issue for me. I went to university in the late 60s, early 70s. That's what we all did. And in fact, I would actually suggest, I'm surprised there aren't more demonstrations at a university. In some cases, if you can't demonstrate at a university, where can you not demonstrate? So, but the occupation of buildings is a difficult one. And I guess the question I have is, why do they feel the need to do that? What's missing that that's the only way they feel they can get their message across?
Okay. Is that sentiment, other people have that sentiment or anything? You got one over here, Haley. Thanks.
I would say that I think I'll agree with your interpretation. I don't mind having peaceful demonstrations, and they can have it. But once they occupy any buildings, I would say that that would be a form of more aggressive behavior to gain, you know, a notoriety, more press. I think I'm nothing against having peaceful demonstrations, but once they get to the next step where they occupy and when asked to leave, they won't leave. I would call that as an aggressive behavior.
Okay. We've had discussions in previous events, distinctions between public space and private space, personal space. I don't know if that makes any sense out here where you've got lots of big, wide open spaces, but discussions about what a university office is not it's not a public space, but it may not be a private space in the sense that the individual owns it, but it's their personal space. And the question of what I'll put it in quotation marks, the invasion of someone's private or personal space means and how that should be viewed by the university, because that's obviously one of the issues that's come up in certainly downtown in this respect. I think, you know, we've heard both of these views. We've heard the view that what is it that caused individuals to think that their only recourse, if in fact that was their only recourse, was to occupy a building, to, this is personal private space, and once you cross the line, you've crossed the line. And, you know, I'd like to hear if you have other views. Again, not necessarily coming out of a MAC campus experience, but coming out of just your own reflections as citizens and members of the university community. Got more?
This is George McCord again. I sometimes wonder if the anonymity issue isn't one of the big problems. I think Caroline has raised it here. We know the students. We know security. We knew a lot of the people on the Munaka, on the picket lines. It was a much more civil discourse. Yes, there was some issues about people worrying about whether they should go down and talk to them, but when we did go down and talk, I had to cross picket lines downtown and I had to cross picket lines here, and there was just a totally different feeling. Here, they knew who I was. They immediately moved aside. I got onto the campus. Downtown, they just looked at me, and the security had to come and get them to move. And I think even with the student perspective, the students know us out here. I think there's more of a community sense out here, and I think students downtown see themselves as anonymous. And when you're anonymous, you're having a conversation with someone who's anonymous, I think your reaction is quite different than out here when you're having a conversation with a student. I mean, Dean Madramuto, he knows a lot of the students out here, so they're not a number. And I think downtown there's a different atmosphere, a different tone, in terms of how the communication goes. Right off the bat, I'm a student, I don't know who you are, so you don't know who I am. So I sometimes think there's a barrier put in there, whereas out here that doesn't exist. And I think the anonymity issue is a huge difference between the two campuses, or lack of.
So we can't replicate the size of MAC campus downtown, but would you have any advice that you could give the people at downtown campus to try to at least mitigate some of these concerns, to remove some of the anonymity, or is there something you think, based again from your external perspective, that you think we might do?
Well, Caroline Begg, many of us are involved with working with students or student groups doing research projects. We engage very strongly, even those higher up in the administration, are engaged with student groups here, and some of them are, well, many of them are not politically active. They have, they're much more socially oriented than that. But there is a very strong, many of the professors here are actively working with student groups all the time.
So getting more involved?
The thing is that I think when George was talking about communication, we have a lot of communication channels that we can use, that we can access. So I think that that's kind of the difference, that there's just a lot of linkages here. We've already established them. And it's because people feel kind of that it's important to work with the students on these projects, whether it's a research project or whether it's some other sort of project or group that's going on, people get engaged.
Okay. Any other comments along those lines? Gary.
Ask a question that's been asked a little bit in a different way. Gary Peckley's from the Faculty of Medicine. So the first thing, you clearly are all proud of something special that you have here that to some degree may be lacking on the downtown campus. I would just caution, though, so some of it is merely the virtue of size. Let's be frank. It's much more manageable here. And there may be something special beyond that. But there is a great deal of variability downtown as well as to whether you're working within a relatively small faculty where that intimacy is more doable than in some of the larger faculties as well. There is variability within the day-to-day encounters and the intimacy of those encounters, but somehow within the dynamics of the large strike in particular, there is a dampening of that effect that doesn't exist here because of the isolation. So much for my downtown defensiveness. I want to go back to a different question and phrase it in a different way. And this is around the limits of freedom of expression. Are there any? And on one side, we heard a comment, geez, I'm surprised, and it resonated for me, that there aren't more demonstrations back when I was a lad. And on the other hand, I heard a comment here saying, well, I don't mind them demonstrating so long as they don't get in my way. I'm overly simplifying what you said. But once you go beyond a verbal expression of unhappiness or discontent or have a feeling, rightly or wrongly, that whatever you're trying to say in conventional ways is not being heard, and that precipitates ratcheting it up. Well, intrinsic to the ratcheting up is indeed some notion of inconveniencing the campus, because that's what it means to ratchet it up. Well, I tried to send a letter, nobody answered me, whatever. So we need to ratchet it up. So if we can look at it maybe with a less problematic word than limits to freedom, but what's a legitimate degree of inconvenience, if you will, and what crosses a line? And how do we try and define is a pretty strong word, but got some sense of what's acceptable inconvenience versus transcending inconvenience. And I'm deliberately picking as banal a word as I could find for this discussion, and that was inconvenience.
So, a great way to put it, Gary. I wish I had done it so eloquently. But
well, at least you were generating responses. So I think you were more effective.
Morton. And then behind you, so.
Martin Mendelson.
I just want to take issue, I think, with the narrative that because people do X, it must be because they weren't being heard and there was no recourse.
They felt they
weren't being heard. Yeah. Okay. And if we allow that to be an excuse for any action, or even some fairly extreme action, then we're actually lost, because there is a point in a university when a professor will have to tell a student no, or you failed, or this isn't acceptable, or an administrative unit will have to take a stance, or the university, after due consideration, will come to a particular conclusion on a certain issue. And then to say, well, there are people who don't like that conclusion, and therefore they feel they're not being heard, and therefore they can do whatever they want to protest. And so that, I think we have to be careful about framing the issue in those terms.
Any response to that? I think it's a reasonably good point. The fact that you don't get what you want doesn't mean you haven't been listened to, and or that your views haven't been taken into consideration. That's perhaps the point you're trying to make certain.
Tim Johns again. It's being listened to, and the perception of being listened to as well. And it comes back to the point or the question you asked about people's perception of in the relationship with the senior administration. I mean, in sitting here in this meeting, it may be clear if I had been reading my email more attentively, but it's not totally apparent to me, you know, why we're having this meeting. I mean, are you looking for guidance that then you will use, the senior administrators will use in the decisions that they, the hard decisions they have to make, the responses to these really, you know, these troubling situations? You know, and if that's true, I mean, it's useful, but we still have the same structure. And I think, you know, we have a situation where for a lot of people, as institutions get bigger and more rigid, then we feel it's Big Brother acting on our behalf. We don't participate. We don't feel that we're participating, and therefore we're not being listened to. If that's, you know, I think what I don't know is, you know, what you're asking, what our advice is for the downtown campus or how things should change. Are we talking about just the guidance to you, or are we talking about some kind of change in the way we approach these types of protests or these types of situations? And I don't think, I'm not the one that believes in, you know, decisions and governance by committees. And senior administrators need to make tough decisions, but, you know, are we looking at some mechanisms that are more inclusive with faculty, students, and the stakeholders that actually will provide some power or some empowerment and some decision making that really relates to how we should go forward with this?
Well, that's a good question. So what am I going to do? So I'm listening to lots of different points of view, both publicly and then in individual meetings, and I'm going to write a report trying to faithfully reflect the views that I've heard and the perceptions that people have, the ideas that they have. And to the extent that, those will inform the thinking of the administration of the university on these issues, and to the extent that they inspire changes to regulations, policies, and so on, those will go through the normal channels. I'm not here to make micro recommendations on how a particular policy should be. I'm trying to get a sense of the community, because I think there is a sense that, as Dean Jutras said, that the university as a community hasn't had really a conversation about what it thinks about free expression and peaceful assembly, and suddenly we had these explosive incidents that pointed out that perhaps we have some shortcomings. We have lots of regulations in the university that regulate expression and assembly. We have the Charter of Student Rights. We have the regulations regarding the employment of academic staff. We have policies about harassment, sexual harassment, and discrimination prohibited by law, which controls what people can say to some degrees. We have, I keep saying this, people who've been to all these four will know this by now. I learned that the university chaplaincy prohibits proselytization as part of its code of conduct. So that's a pretty strong control on the freedom of expression of the university chaplaincy. So we have all those things. Do we have the right balance? To give you an example, in the Charter of Student Rights, talks about the right of students to peaceful assembly, but then makes it an offense under the Code of Student Conduct to disrupt university activities, I'm paraphrasing that, but then says that nothing in that section should be construed as limiting the right to freedom of peaceful assembly. So if you say that you're disrupting university events in the name of peaceful assembly, does that immunize you from a charge under the Code of Student Conduct? That's something that Dean Jutra pointed out. There's a lacuna there. There's an inconsistency. Maybe it doesn't make any sense out on the Mac campus, but it may make sense down on the downtown campus. So there are these sorts of things that are out there when I hear what people say, will help me to perhaps try to shed some light on some of these inconsistencies. And after that, they'll go through the regular channels of governance that are necessary to deal with these things. So that's where I think we are in this process. Now, I've heard from lots of faculty. I've heard from some non-academic staff. I don't know if there are any students here who no one looks like a student, but maybe. I know I have students from the downtown campus are here, but I know I've got a sense, but anyway, a student just walked in, so you know, sorry, I got to put you on the spot, so quickly, Mac students' views on freedom of expression, what's going on campus, what you thought of November 10th, there you are, you're going to speak for your entire group.
Really, my worst nightmare.
That's all right, I'm a professor, that's my job, is to give students their worst nightmares, so anyway.
What do I think about?
Well, so, you know, look, you've observed what's happened on the downtown campus, and you've discussed it with your other students at Mac campus. I mean, what are you talking about from the student perspective on Mac campus about November 10th, about the February occupation, about, I know you had a one-day student strike here at Mac campus.
I mean,
so what are you thinking about your ability to express yourselves, your ability to assemble members?
I mean, I guess my own... Just mostly just seeing, reading a lot of like the emails coming from McGill, it seems sort of, it's all very, everything that's going on from what it looks like to me is all very symbolic. Even our strike here that we had was one day, like a symbol that we were going to go on the day to strike and then march in the march. And then even, I don't know, something about it seems very, I don't know if you know the sort of the image of a rabbit being chased by a fox where they sort of clock in the morning and chase each other around and then clock out and then go home. And then they're like, see you tomorrow.
So Roadrunner and the Coyote.
Sort of. I don't know, sometimes it feels that way with what's going on. Like everyone's kind of doing their job to sort of be protesting and also to sort of let a protest go on. But I don't know. I don't know how to explain. I'm no worried.
Theater.
I'm a science student. But this is just, it seems like a lot. Even just like the response of the university and sort of letting it happen, but also like sort of letting people play at protesting, but not necessarily like responding to it, and sort of like giving people their space to, okay, that's fine, you guys can protest over here, but then you're actually not really, I don't know. It's hard to know because I don't know exactly how the university is responding to that. Is like the demands of the people protesting, or if it's more just, it seems more like a response to the actual protests themselves, and it all seems kind of like everyone's playing their role as being subversive and being unhappy and then sort of letting things going on while also trying to cover, you know, let everybody know, like, don't worry, they've got water, don't worry, they've had access to medical attention, speaking of the people who were at occupying, was it the James building
right.
For that week, and it, I don't know, and none of it seems very substantial on any end, like, nothing seems to be going anywhere at all, just, like, people don't seem to be communicating, there's sort of, they're playing roles.
Okay.
That's been my perspective.
Go ahead, sir. Jim.
I think there's a bigger issue here that we need to be talking about. And I think this is really the right time to be having this conversation, because the question in my mind is, I'm a systems ecologist. I'm used to looking at systems. I'm used to looking at indistinct connections between a bunch of diverse pieces. And I don't think the suite of events that we've had, including those protests and a lot of the discussions and various things that have happened, I don't feel that they're random. And I wonder whether, in fact, we have crossed some kind of a threshold where we will see more and more of this. And I think it's not just McGill. I think it's society at large that drives us. But we need to have this conversation about what kind of an institution we want to have. What is McGill's personality, and how does that influence how we behave and what we do? Because that personality influences whether I voice my discontent, was the word, or the in a sense of imposing inconvenience, or whether I seek dialogue, I seek some other kinds of restitution that's happening. And I think that's part of our personality and what we have to live into. Now, I think driven by some external processes and perhaps internal processes, we have shifted from something that was, in a sense, driven largely by dialogue. So collegiality is dialogue. And in the past, 25 years ago, when I came here, there was a feeling of that it was dialogue. And then more recently, there's a series of events that sort of say, okay, and we hear this, okay, we don't want to be run by committees, and, you know, that kind of collegiality isn't very efficient and all the rest of those things, so we need to have some other kind of mechanism. So we have shifted toward, one of the things that sort of dialogue doesn't do, it doesn't necessarily do accountability particularly well. There's a whole variety of things it doesn't do, and so we've evolved to be a more and more rule-based organization, and that there's a sense that we need to get the rules right so that we can have everybody organized, and then all we have to do is behave by the rules. But once we get a set of rules, then life becomes black and white, and I don't think the issues that we're talking about are really dealt well in black and white, because they're, in many cases, they're shades of gray. And that once we have a rule, then there's a line on the ground, and we step across it or we don't step across it. Okay, when in fact, maybe the line is not a line. Maybe it's a zone. Maybe it's a frontier or those kinds of things. And we've lost, perhaps, our ability to make those kinds of reasoned decisions. That's what the dialogue, the collegiality, does. It says we need to talk about whether that's a line or whether it's a zone or whether it's a frontier and how we should deal with that. And that in a sense, you know, we get this. I mean, NSERC accountability rules are just, you know, tighter than a drum. And so that comes down to us and we adopt those things. The government requirements for reporting, they're very, very clear and tight, and we have to follow those kinds of rules. But I believe personally that whole idea that rules are good has permeated what we do, and that our management, our administration at all levels, just says, okay, we just got to get the rules right. And I think, I wonder whether that transition, we've just hit a threshold that goes to a place where now we're precipitating confrontation where we didn't have it before. Why is it that we have like six or however many unions now, and 5 years ago we had one? Like, why is that? I don't think that came from nowhere. There's a process there, and it buys into confrontation that now, in a sense, we need to be able to think about how we're going to deal with that. I'm not sure if we can reel the process back, but if we really engage in some kind of introspection about, and it comes back to the point by, I'm sorry, I don't know your name, the student here, to say, are we just playing at consultation, or are we really consulting? Are we having that dialogue, or is the administration just wanting us to feel that we're having that dialogue, and then they can just do whatever they want to do? I mean, we see those sorts of things. I mean, I come from the experience in the forest industry, and forest companies are always saying, okay, we're greenwashing things, and, you know, everything's fine, and you just can, you know, have your protest and go away, everything's fine, and we'll just do whatever we want. So, I mean, it's pervasive in society. But I think there's some really deep thinking that we as an institution need to do about our, what I would refer to as the corporate model that we adopt and how that works. And I think it comes in there are many, many, many different dimensions of that through issues around tenure, promotion, those sorts of things, and it comes how we teach, what we teach, all sorts of things that come in there. So, sorry, that's a long rant.
Well, no, but I think that's exactly what Dean Jutra had in mind when he said there should be an open forum on free expression and peaceful assembly. I think what he really did have in mind was he sort of used three different terms: what should be permitted, what should be tolerated, what should be prohibited. And you're saying we've sort of eliminated that middle ground. Now we've got what's permitted and what's prohibited, and there's no room to maneuver, in a sense. And so I think he wants us to have a discussion about what's in that middle ground, that where, you know, we're inconvenienced, but we're willing to put up with a little bit of inconvenience for a while. And he raised that, you know, how much inconvenience for how long, and do we get to know who's inconveniencing us, or do they get to hide their identity, or do we have to... if I can paraphrase some of the things that he said. So I think that's exactly the conversation that he wants us to have. I mean, you also picked up I'll make this a last point, because actually I know a lot of you have to go soon, although I'm here till 3 o'clock. So as they say, I'm here all week. Don't forget to tip your waiter. You use the word, so if I hear the buzzword of securitization on campus, the other buzzword we often hear is the corporatization of the university. And that's not just a McGill thing. That's something that people have talked about universities worldwide. And the question for me is, there are certain parts of the university that actually have to work efficiency like companies, your accounting operations, your finance operations. As you said, there are external requirements that are placed on universities that require that they act more like, universities are big, serious, you know, this is a $1 billion-a-year organization. That is accountable to lots of external governments, private foundations, people who support us. We can't just do things haphazardly. We have to bureaucratize, in a sense. And some people have interpreted that as sort of undermining the soul of what universities are. And I think that is an important conversation to have. But I actually wanted to change gears and raise a topic that's interesting to me, maybe not to anybody else. It doesn't come out of the Jutra report, nevertheless, but I think it's important when we talk about free expression, and I don't know whether you've had this experience on this campus or not, but that is how the university should deal with external speakers who may have controversial views who come onto campus. Sometimes we see, you know, there's a tension. There are those who think that anybody should be allowed to come on campus if they're invited to say anything they want. There are others who argue that some points of view are so obnoxious that the university should take a stand and not let those points of view be articulated on campus. We haven't really had that discussion at McGill very much. We've had some incidents, at least downtown, maybe not at Mac campus. But I guess, so for example, if forestry industry representatives who wanted to come in and tell you, or oil sands people who wanted to come in and tell you how great they are at keeping the environment clean. If there was a group at Mac campus that said, no, you can't, you know, why are you giving a platform to these forestry industry people or oil industry people? You should stop that. What would be the view out here? Or is that something that we should be concerned about? People who come on campus and express views that may be outside the conventional view that's held. I think that's an important part of this conversation that doesn't come directly out of the events that gave rise to the Jutra report in this forum, but I'm trying to take advantage of the pulpit I have to try to get views on that. So, what do you have views on that? Is this an issue that comes up?
I think I will again use the same logic that Jim Files have said, and you also summarized, that some things are allowed, some things are in between, and some things are not tolerated or not to be tolerated. So I think that would be the argument that I would use when deciding on who to invite or who to let to come to the campus and speak. If this person is going to speak on things that we're not going to tolerate, then the answer is no. We as a community, not as a subgroup.
Okay. So let me try to use a very specific, somebody invites someone to come up here and say that global warming is a complete myth, We don't have to worry about it. You're going to destroy our economy with these ridiculous policies that are unnecessary. And, you know, what do you do about that?
Well, I take a different view. If I have someone who is on the other side of the extreme, I would invite someone who would be on the other side, and I would have more a dialogue between, or a platform where the two or three different types of opinions are presented, and then have the audience to participate. I think this is, for me, as a person, I find it much more interesting to see the pros and the cons and the comments and an active dialogue rather than a monologue. And it becomes like any political platform. You have speakers speaking, and then you have the audience, and everybody has respect to their own views, but there has to be a good constructive dialogue.
Okay, but what if somebody comes to you and says, you shouldn't even legitimate that point of view by letting that person come on campus and act as if there really is a debate about this issue? What would you do about that? If somebody said, you know, even to allow a debate on what it should, what is really an undebatable issue, is to legitimate that position,
isn't science a debatable issue?
Okay.
That's good. There are hypotheses, objectives, and there are pros and cons, and we as scientists should be open to all views and be able to express our views, whether for the pros and cons, and it has to be a constructive dialogue.
Okay.
That's what I believe.
Jim, I saw you wanted to say something.
Or just that, with that specific example, we teach a course on that, and I would require my students to go, and I would require them to assign them a critique of the argument, and perhaps even working up the other side. So in that, I don't think that's too much of a difficult one. I could see that probably in other domains there would be some more difficult kinds of issues.
Such as? And how would you deal with it?
I believe when religion and politics become one unit, that's a bit dangerous.
Okay. I think anything that falls under a hate crime is just a no-brainer. I mean, if someone wants to come on campus and advocate destruction to one group or one, you know, one people, I mean, that's just not tolerable. That's not debatable. But we're talking about scientific debate, well, that's a different issue.
Okay. So certainly things that may be clearly defined by law.
Yeah, hate crimes.
With your question, are we embarking on a slippery slope of questioning academic accountability, or are we?
I'm not sure I understand your question. A slippery slope towards what?
Academic freedom. Sorry, are we by you phrasing that question? Are you sort of cracking the door to questioning academic freedom?
Well, let me tell you that. So there have been three incidents at the downtown campus where people have come people have been invited to speak on campus that other groups have found to be controversial, and they've actually prevented them from speaking. So the question is, what should the university's stance be on that? Sure. There was a pro-life. There was an invitation of a pro-life group, and the individual was prevented from speaking by members of the university community who thought that it was simply beyond tolerable to let someone advocate a pro-life position on campus. Well, yeah, but you know, there's the way in which people express the views. Sure, that's the way that person communicated their point of view, right? The second was the Minister of Citizenship and Immigration came on campus, and a group of students tried to prevent that. Also, outsiders tried to prevent that because they considered the immigration policies to be racist. And then a third event was a speaker in a mining engineering class was sort of prevented from speaking because he was in favor of mining, I guess. And then there was a recent incident where the Faculty of Law had invited a speaker whose positions on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict were inconsistent with the views of some very important supporters of the Faculty of Law, I think, and that raised some questions and whether that was an appropriate person. So those are the kinds of things that have happened recently in the last few years, some of them the following. And you're right, they're all in the political social domain, perhaps, except for the mining one. That may be more of a scientific thing about whether, you know, some people think that it's just wrong to mine, and they want to prevent companies from doing mining, I guess. But so those are the kinds of things, so I don't know. So some people would argue, perhaps with the exception of speech that is clearly prohibited by the criminal code, that it's all fair game. The answer is to let people argue with them. And then the question is that the position the university should take? And should they, I guess the question would be, should the university protect the right of speakers like that to speak on campus if they've been invited by a legitimate university group to speak?
That's what you do with the mission of the university.
Okay. So
is there a process that the university works in order to the people whoever is inviting can go through and know what is to there, do and what is not to do before the invitation?
There is. I think the deputy provost has talked about that.
It's for the camera.
Sorry, yeah, it's not for this room. It's because you're on camera.
Well, at least on the downtown campus, the way things operate is if there is a group that is legitimately associated with the university, so it can't be a group that comes off the street, but if a group that's legitimately associated with the university, so this could be academically associated with a department or associated with a student society, if that group invites a speaker, and there's the test of we're not interested in having speakers who will espouse hate speech, but if it's legal, then it's allowable in the university, and position of the university administration is that the range of views is something that should be celebrated and something that should be fostered. There are a lot of people who, like yourself, say, well, we should have, if there's someone controversial, there should be an obligation to invite someone who has an opposing point of view. But I think that's problematic. We don't ask for an opposing point of view if someone wants to talk about global warming. But if people were to find someone who says that there is no global warming controversial, and they say, well, there should be someone a point of view, well, there's a double standard here. And one would hope that over time, even if there isn't opposing points of views expressed in every encounter, one would hope that over time there would be opposing points of view. So if there's a group that objects to an argument of pro-choice, pro-choice argument, well, that group presumably on another occasion might bring a pro-life view, and then there's the pro-choice view, and on different occasions they would bring different people. The interesting thing about the pro-life issue was that people were clearly warned about the content of the talk. They were warned about the issue. It was held in a room where they had to go to, and so no one had to be there. But there were still members of the university community who felt that their views or the views of the speaker should not be allowed to be stated in the university. And so I personally find that problematic, and I find it really difficult to, I don't see how we as a university could administer a policy or a regulation that required a vetting by a person or by a committee about the appropriateness of a particular point of view. That would lead to other kinds of problems.
Anyone else have points of view on that, sir? Tim.
Yeah, this may be in place or maybe not, but when one thinks in a broader, just sort of general way about what a university is and you know, what the importance of debate on issues is within a university, then it's that exchange of opinions and views that's critical. I mean, in these specific situations, there's a scenario where somebody comes in and sort of spews their message, and there's another situation where they get to speak legitimately, and then there's opportunity for sort of commentary and feedback, et cetera. I mean, I assume that when somebody is allowed to speak on campus, that in that nature, that it is a public event, that should be open. It seems to me we should have rules that people are allowed to express, but there should also be certainly philosophically at least an opportunity for people to, not necessarily we invite somebody with a counter argument, but at least the community gets to dialogue as well and express what they feel in response to something that might be controversial.
Any other comments on that? Well, we're coming close to the end of our time, so I just want to see if there are any final comments or questions. Is there anything coming in from outside, Josh? Any comments or questions that people might want to have? So.
Okay, so coming from online, someone says, has anyone ever considered the institution of a speaker's corner or blog or Twitter as a vehicle for a legitimate expression of points of view, something that permits a middle ground of free expression within bounds? As Professor Manfredi has stated, a pulpit for free expression.
So that's a good question. One of the things that's come up in previous forum is, and I talked about this at the beginning about location, whether if we designated a particular space on this campus or the downtown campus, said, in this space, anything goes, pretty much. And in other spaces are more restricted. Maybe that doesn't resonate here because of the nature of your space, but what do people think about that? If you were on downtown and we said, okay, at this spot, there's a speaker's corner, anyone can say anything. It's got a long tradition in liberal democracies. Any points of view on that? All right. Don't have any hecklers there. Any others? Hooting. Any other views on that? It's an interesting question. We've had different points of view expressed. Some people have said this actually would be a very good way of doing it. Others have worried that that in fact it's precisely the inconveniencing that's important, and that if you normalize dissent, you actually remove its power somehow. Some people have framed it in terms of not so much where anything can happen, but trying to designate a smaller number of places where this kind of activity is simply not prohibited, whether it's private offices or or protected things. So there's been a number of different points of view expressed. So if you have them, feel free to contact me with them. Anything else there, Josh? Any final comments from the audience that you'd like to me to take away? Provost, Tony Massey.
The administration is listening and trying to understand better the sentiments of the community with regard to these important issues. And the issues of freedom of speech on campus and freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, are fundamental to the life of not only the campus, but the democracy that surrounds it. And the intersection of that with academic freedom is another important question that does need to be addressed. And so we are looking at that as well. But I think it's important to realize that criticism of the administration is part of academic life, and those of us in those positions certainly expect it. I wouldn't say we thrive on it, but we expect it. And it's important to be able to hear from colleagues as to what is going right as well as what's going wrong, and to try to move in that direction. And these fora have actually given us an enormous amount of information, and Chris has been doing a terrific job in bringing forward information about how people feel and express themselves about what's going on. I think Tim said it as before as well. It's we have facts and we have perceptions, but the important thing to remember is that if people think things are real, then they have real consequences. And so we have not only to deal with facts, but also with perceptions. And that's what we've been trying to deal with in these fora. So we are listening, and we're going to take it seriously.
I always said, as a dean, I'd always know I was doing a bad job if I reached a situation where either everyone was mad at me or no one was mad at me. That would be when I was doing a bad job. If there are no final comments, I want to thank everyone for being here, and there will be a report. If you're on the downtown campus next April 4th, next week, we're holding the fourth open forum in the Blini Atrium, and there will be food served on a first-come, first-served basis, so you can get a free meal if you want to come down there. So anyway, thank you all very much for your time. I appreciate it. Thank you.